Hello, I'm Al Randall. This is number 0576, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0576. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, legendary comedian Rich Little, who is doing a live virtual stage show called Rich Little Virtually Speaking. Before the pandemic, he was doing five shows a week at the Tropicana in Vegas.
When I left there, they said, you're going to be off for a couple of weeks. And I was disappointed. And now it's over 5 months later, and we're still not back at work. So it's been quite a jolt to my career, you know, not to perform, because I miss it. But hopefully, I'll be back at the Tropicana soon. I think within a couple of weeks, they'll probably start the shows again. Let's hope so, because people need to get out, and they need laughter. You know, that's the best medicine for everybody. And I'm looking forward to going back to work.
Sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney on Sports in the Pandemic World. How can college football possibly have a season?
How is it that we see what happened at Rutgers, we see what happened at North Carolina, there's parties, and then people walk away, and they have COVID-19, they test positive, they have to be isolated on these various campuses, even Notre Dame. So if you're having that problem, number one, and then you can't even go to class, I don't know how you think you're going to really, truly have what we would call a normal college football season. When you think about the athletes, even as much as they can do to try to protect them, I don't think you can do enough.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter looks at the best-selling memoir by the Canadian-born host of the game show Jeopardy, Alex Trebek. Ding! What is the answer is? Right, Stuart, correct. And we'll explore more from this category soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0576, was Al Randall, a broadcaster and voice guy and a former colleague of mine back in the day at Montreal CJFM FM 96. And an all-around nice guy, too. A nice guy. Thank you very much, Al, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, many a longtime listener to this show knows how I feel about cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. Here's yet another story that proves my point. A man casually walking with his dog, man's best friend, by the way, in China was captured on video unwittingly being cold-cocked by a falling cat in the 45-second closed-circuit TV footage, which at press time has attracted more than 1.1 million views on YouTube. A senior citizen named Gao is seen going for a stroll with his golden retriever in Harbin. Out of nowhere, a black and white cat drops out of the sky and hits him in the head, causing him to collapse on the sidewalk unconscious. According to reports, the feline belonged to his elderly neighbor and had fallen from his balcony. Several bystanders could be seen walking past Gao's prone body before his dog approaches to see what went awry. The canine then spots the vicious assailant lurking by a building and lunges at it, barking. The dog and kitty are then seen engaged in an intense stare down before the camera cuts back to the victim. According to the UK newspaper The Sun, the cat-induced knockdown caused the man to spend 23 days in the hospital. He continues to sport a neck brace and is undergoing physical therapy. He's also seeking compensation from his neighbor. Now, don't need to punchline for this story. As I said, cats are just evil. It's a proven fact. Want to check out the video, by the way? You can. It's posted on the Stuff File Program Facebook fan page. Note how the bystanders in the video just look at the poor unconscious man and just walk away. They're all probably taking orders from that cat. I'll say it again. Cats are evil. Wisconsin Natural Resources Secretary Preston Cole has reminded employees that the governor has ordered all state employees to wear masks at work to fight COVID. That means, Cole said, masks must be worn even if you're home to participate in a virtual meeting that involves being seen, such as on Zoom. The governor's order doesn't require mask wearing in private homes, and Republican State Representative Joe Sanfilippo said, "I'm more inclined to support things that actually do help, as opposed to just putting on an appearance of helping." He called the directive ridiculous. Meanwhile, Cole says his directive helps to, quote, "set the safety example," unquote. Wow. It also sets a delusional dictatorial power example. That's my quote. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
It's a finger-licking Kentucky Fried Chicken, a finger-licking good day.
Not so fast. From the Let's All Go Too Far department, because of COVID-19, after 64 years, KFC is suspending the use of its slogan, "It's Finger Lickin' Good."
I like my chicken finger lickin' good.
Too bad. In a statement, KFC said in an unprecedented year, during which the COVID-19 pandemic has upended businesses and lives around the globe, use of the slogan doesn't feel quite right.
I like my chicken finger licking good,
said Catherine Tan Gillespie, Global Chief Marketing Officer at KFC. We find ourselves in a unique situation, having an iconic slogan that doesn't quite fit in the current environment. While we are pausing the use of "It's Finger Licking Good," rest assured, the food craved by so many people around the world isn't changing one bit.
I like my chicken finger licking good.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one of the steps people can take to protect themselves from spreading COVID-19 is washing hands often and keeping hands away from your mouth, nose, and eyes. KFC said the slogan will not go away forever. The chain said they will bring it back when the time is right. Okay, so KFC has gone to a complete knee-jerk reaction. I think we all learned as kids to wash our hands before we eat. So, assuming your hands are clean, if you're eating KFC and then you lick your fingers, I fail to see the problem. Unless, of course, your fingers are dripping with Purell. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Legendary comedian Rich Little is back on the show. The master mimic, with more than 200 voices in his repertoire, is about to add to his resume with an historic career first, a virtual club act. It's called Rich Little, Virtually Speaking, which will be coming to you from Las Vegas. Rich has also updated and re-released his book, Little by Little, People I've Known and Been, with all the book sales benefiting veterans through the Gary Sinise Foundation. Rich joins us on the line from Las Vegas. Hi, Rich.
Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you are. This is George Burns. Maybe it's Jack Benny. It could be John Wayne or maybe Ronald Reagan. You never know. No, I think it's Rich Little because all those people are gone.
Now, the last time I spoke to you, you were embarking on a residency at the Tropicana. You were doing 5 nights a week. You were performing every night. You're a person who's been busy your entire career. And I would assume that this whole shutdown of COVID, especially in a place like Vegas, must just have you going nuts. Is that how this...
Well, yeah, when I left there, they said, you're going to be off for a couple of weeks. And I was disappointed. And now it's over 5 months later, and we're still not back at work. So it's been quite a quite a jolt to my career, you know, not to perform because I miss it. But hopefully I'll be back at the Tropicana soon. I think within a couple of weeks they'll probably start the shows again. Let's hope so, because people need to get out and they need laughter. You know, that's the best medicine for everybody. And I'm looking forward to going back to work.
Now, I mentioned the virtual show, virtually speaking. I understand it's directed by another friend of this show, Alison Arngrim, who people remember as Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie. How did the two of you hook up?
Right.
How did the two of you hook up?
Well, she I think, did a couple of shows and had so much success with them that she contacted me. I've never met her, but she's coming down here on the 15th, and I'll meet her for the first time. She's quite an amazing gal and a great actress and has had a great career. So I'm looking forward to meeting her. And the show we're going to do is going to be on the 15th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. And you can purchase tickets by going directly to stageit.com and put my name on the search. And for information, you can go to richfiddle.com or my Facebook. But I'm going to be doing a live performance, and I'm going to be doing it from my living room. And through the magic of TV, they're going to put a backdrop of me in a club. So you'll think I'm performing from a club, but I'm really doing it in my living room.
Now, I know you want to go...
Something new.
I know you want to go back in front of the audiences at the Tropicana at the first chance you get. But with a lot of the things that have been going on with virtual working and virtual shows now that people are doing, is there a possibility that even though you will get back to the Tropicana and things will get back to normal, or at least a new normal, that maybe this is something you will be able to still do in the future for those who can't get to Vegas to see you?
Well, yeah, that's a very good possibility. You know, you can do a show anywhere, actually, and people can buy tickets and watch you, and they don't have to go to the casinos, you know. Although there's nothing like seeing somebody live, you know, and I'm still live at the moment, so that'll be good. but anyway, I like performing in front of an audience, but it'll be a little bit tricky doing this show because I won't hear any laughter, you know. And it's kind of funny when you think of it. But then when you think of movies that are, you know, comedies that don't have any laughter, you know, they do it anyway. So you don't really need the laughter, but it certainly helps a performer, you know. So I'm looking forward to going back to the Trop, but I'm also looking forward to doing this show, too, because I'm going to do a lot of impressions and a couple of new ones that I've added to my repertoire. And it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
And one of the things you have always been noted for are your political impersonations as well. And we are living in really difficult times these days. Sometimes some people might find it difficult to laugh at the situations we are currently in politically. Has it been easier or more difficult to do impersonations in the times we live in?
No, not really. You know, the political voices have always been popular. And I do, let's see, I think I do 10 presidents. And I do, I've met actually about 8 of them. And, you know, my... the ones that I like to do best are Ronald Reagan, and I like to do Jimmy Carter because he was different, and Richard Nixon, of course, we remember him. Well, a lot of people do, you know, you got young people in the audience, and a lot of these people, they don't know. So, you know, you have to appeal, or at least I have to appeal to people around my age group, because a lot of the voices I do are not remembered, you know?
Of the voices that you do that are your most famous for, especially the political ones, Do you know which of the impressions you did most impressed the person you were doing? Who liked your impression the most of them?
Well, Ronald Reagan stands out. He used to say to me, "You know, Rich, I think you do me better than I do. As a matter of fact, I think you should be president." I said, "No, thanks. No, thanks, but thanks for the compliment." But he was a great audience, and I got along great with him. He had a wonderful sense of humor, Ronald Reagan did. And he was probably my favorite of all the politicians I've met. And, you know, George Bush Sr., you know, was a pretty good guy. Okay, good. Gotcha. Good.
And Jimmy Carter was one of the great presidents. At least he thought so. I had the biggest and best nuts in the country. I was a peanut farmer.
So the
and then, of course, Richard Nixon. You know, when I was a little liar growing up in Whittier, California, nobody liked me. Nobody liked me at all. I remember my father at age 5 picked me up, threw me up in the air, and walked away. I have a lot of fun with politicians. I make politicians say kind of dumb things, you know. And I did the same with the teachers, too, you know, because we always thought the teachers were wise, wonderful people, you know. We looked up to them, and then to have them say stupid, dumb things always made it very funny. So when I have the politicians saying silly things, it gets a big reaction, you know.
So again, this show that you're going to be doing, this virtual show, because people will want to see you online, Rich Little, virtually speaking, it's going to be taking place when and how can people find out more information and how much does it cost?
Well, as I said, it's going to be on the 15th of October, 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, and tickets are $15. And it can be purchased, as I said, by going to stageit.com and put my name in the search, or go to richlittle.com or my Facebook page. And that's the way to see the show. And I'm going to be doing about a half hour, and I'm probably going to do about 30 impressions in the half hour. And one of my newest impressions is William Devane.
Oh.
You know who William Devane is?
Absolutely. Was on, among other things, was on Knott's Landing for several years.
That's right. He just did 24 with Keith Sutherland, too. Yeah. Great. But anyway, I do William Devane. I just got his voice down. I buy my gold at Roslyn Capital every chance I get. I buy from Roslyn because I trust them. Roslyn will beat any coin at any time, at any price. But if you don't want to buy from Roslyn Capital, go to your nearest bank. You'll be wearing a mask, so you can probably take out $10,000 or $20,000 worth of gold. Roslyn Capital, I trust them.
And I want to mention very quickly before I let you go, because I know you're busy and you got to go. I mentioned in the introduction that your book, Little by Little, People I've Known and Been, is being re-released, and the sales are benefiting veterans through the Gary Sinise Foundation. How did that come to be?
That's right. That's right. We're going to re-release the book. I've added a few things to it, and it's now in its third printing because the first two were lost. Anyway, that's silly. But anyway, no, I'm going to be re-releasing the book. It's called People I Have Known and Been, and I talk about all the wonderful people that I've worked with down through the years. I talk about 20 people in the book, and my experience of working with them and what they were like and some of the funny stories that have happened. I talk about Orson Welles, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Lucille Ball. My gosh, I talk about so many people. And I think it's an interesting book because even I like it.
Well, Rich, I thank you once again for being on the program with us. I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to seeing you when you do Rich Little Virtually Speaking, which will take place Thursday, October 15th at 5 p.m. Pacific. That's 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again. Stay safe.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for calling. I'll talk to you soon.
Legendary comedian Rich Little. Again, he's performing live in a virtual show called Rich Little Virtually Speaking. The show is taking place on Thursday, October 15th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, from Las Vegas. Tickets are available from stageit.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0576, and you'll find links to where you can buy tickets to Rich's show. You'll also find links to his website and links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can purchase his book entitled Little by Little, People I've Known and Been. Again, proceeds of his book benefit veterans through the Gary Sinise Foundation. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about pro sports and college sports in a pandemic world. Plus, Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can also find it on several radio stations, such as WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, WLSL-LPFM in Dade City, Florida, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and CKLU 96.7 FM in Sudbury. Thanks to all for joining in. Let's get back to the stuff. During a debate over how to reopen schools, Heidi Anderson spoke up at the Elmbrook, Wisconsin school board meeting. 6 foot distance and wearing masks are pagan rituals of satanic worshipers, she declared. Yep, she said that. Our children do not practice satanic worship. We don't have them stand 6 feet apart from each other with facial coverings. The board president, Mashir Hassan, a Muslim, you can see where this is going, told Anderson to avoid defamatory comments. This is not defamatory, she retorted. I'm stating facts. You're a leader of the Islamic community, are you not? My kids are Christians. They are not subject to face coverings. Wow. So I guess there's no Halloween for her kids either. The board voted in to start in-person instruction, to require masks for all staff and students, and to make a virtual learning option available. So, I guess Heidi's kids will be staying home and using the demonic internet. Wonder how she feels about dancing. Please, nobody tell her about the movie Footloose. Federal prosecutors said a for-profit college in Florida hired exotic dancers to work as admissions representatives to attract young men to the school. The U.S. Attorney's Office and Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, who joined a whistleblower lawsuit against Miami-based Fast Train College, said in a civil complaint at least one of the school's now closed campuses used strippers as admissions representatives. The college purposely hired attractive women and sometimes exotic dancers and encouraged them to dress provocatively while they recruited young men in neighborhoods to attend Fast Train. The school's campuses were shut down following a raid by the FBI. Alejandro Amor, can't make that name up, the chief executive officer of the company, was indicted in October on criminal charges of conspiracy and theft of government money. Federal authorities said the school received more than $35 million in Pell Grants and other federal financial aid, and they allege the school obtained a large amount of grant money through fraudulent means, including falsifying high school diplomas for ineligible students. Yes, I'm sure potential physics majors were trying to figure out how to make left tassels go clockwise while right tassels go counterclockwise. Police in Florida caught wind of a woman who was fed up with her father's flatulence. 40-year-old Nicole Dozois, who lived with her 59-year-old dad in Largo near Tampa Bay, was arrested for allegedly battering him because of his smelly emissions. Police allege Nicole punched her father in the face numerous times, and officers found him with a bloodied left eye and scratches all over his neck as a result. Nicole has been released with bail and pleaded not guilty to a misdemeanor charge of domestic battery. She has been ordered by a judge to keep away from her father. This isn't Nicole's first brush with the law. She was arrested in 2018 for allegedly hitting her sister, though she wasn't charged for that. So, if she's been released but she can't go back to live with her father, then where can she go? I doubt that her sister will take her in. I also doubt that she's going to live on a farm. You know, I bet she was the kind of kid in kindergarten who got the note in her report card that said, "Doesn't play well with others." And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, I've often said that one of the most powerful books around is the Bible. Well, here's proof positive. A 27-year-old man from Bangor, Maine, is behind bars for allegedly trying to steal a car and using a Bible as a weapon in the crime. Benjamin Parker, whom I guess you can call a Bible thumper, allegedly tried to steal a family's car after they pulled over to the side of the road to take pictures last Sunday morning. Bangor police said the vehicle's driver noticed Parker in the front seat and a struggle ensued. During the tussle, Parker reportedly hit the vehicle owner with a Bible. Parker was pulled out of the vehicle and then he fled on foot. Authorities later found the suspect hiding behind a home with the Bible. Religion couldn't save Parker, though, as he's been charged with robbery and assault. He's currently behind bars, possibly repenting for his actions, at Penobscot County Jail, held on $900 bail. I would pass judgment on Parker, but as you know, let he who was without sin cast the first stone. No, not that kind of stone. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? As the current pandemic drags on, it's had an effect not only on the lives it's taken, but also in the way of life for many. That has played out in the sports world as well. The NBA and the NHL are in a bubble, Major League Baseball has had its issues, and the NFL is cautiously getting ready to start. Plus, college football won't even get into the starting blocks this fall. To talk about this, we're joined by sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney. She's also the author of Deal Your Own Destiny. Kate joins us on the line from Texas. Hi, Kate.
Peter, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Let's talk about the football situation. the college football, because as of press time, basically all of college football is dead, or are there still some places holding out?
I think there's a few holdouts. In fact, I know there's a few holdouts, but one by one, the dominoes are falling. When too many of the big conferences decided, hey, we're not going to do this, you knew that it was probably only a matter of time. But there still are some that are saying, no, we're gonna take this one step at a time and watch and see what happens and see if we can possibly play. But lots of people are furious, and I just don't think you're going to really see a college football season.
It's kind of interesting, the dichotomy between the idea of sending kids out to play a sport on the field when you really can't even send them to class.
Well, I agree with you. How is it that, you know, we see what happened at Rutgers, we see what happened at North Carolina, there's parties, and then people walk away, and they have COVID-19, they test positive, they have to be isolated on these various campuses, even Notre Dame. So if you're having that problem, number one, and then you can't even go to class, I don't know how you think you're going to really, truly have what we would call a normal college football season. When you think about the athletes, even as much as they can do to try to protect them, I don't think you can do enough.
I tend to believe that, you know, the sports should be all canceled. That's just me, even though I'm a sports fan. I'm a big NFL fan, so I'm looking down the road here, not at the upcoming season, but at the upcoming draft. Because where are those players going to be coming from?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, isn't it? What happens is, I think they're talking about, can we move, and this isn't official, but they're, because the official word from the NFL is, we're having a regular season, we're doing what we do, we're watching what happened in college football. But to your point, if college football is the feeder system, then so many of those juniors going to be seniors won't get that opportunity to be seen. They're saying that in some of the conferences already that are not playing, like the Big Ten, the Pac-12, that they can stay and they can basically redshirt and come back another year. But I think that's going to be tough to try to manipulate that. So I think the draft is going to be a nightmare if the draft goes on as scheduled, because there's so many players that won't get that opportunity.
And speaking of the NFL, it's the last major sport to start in this post-COVID world. Now, looking at the first three, the NBA and the NHL are both in a bubble. The MLB is not in a bubble. They've had problems. Is this something the NFL is looking at, and can they change? Because they're not in a bubble themselves.
They're not, but they feel confident. They have, like, it's a 100-page manual, I heard, where it has all these different regulations, ways to prep for this, ways to take temperatures constantly to make sure you're on top of everything. But because, to your point, Pete, the bubble that you saw in the NBA is working. Kudos to Adam Silver. That is totally working for the NBA, totally working for the NHL with the two different sites in Canada. But then you look at Major League Baseball, and as you said, there have been some problems, although they're still going. And Rob Manfred, the baseball commissioner, vows, yeah, we're going to keep going. If we get some tests, those people are pulled out, and we keep on moving and we reschedule. So I think they're going to actually finish their season, and that's what the NFL is looking at. They're looking at what's going on with Major League Baseball, and they're not going to have, I don't see how they're going to have fans, or if they do, it's going to be limited fans and really spaced out is what they're talking about now. But I still say, how do you keep that protected? And, you know, the Vikings are saying they're not going to have fans at their first two home games. And you're starting to see that more teams are making their own regulations, too, as to what they're going to do.
And again, getting back to the college football situation, you know, the difference between the NFL, of course, and college is the NFL players are professionals. They're adults. They're highly paid. The idea that you might send out kids to play, I mean, they are kids, but, you know, send out kids to play football with really no compensation and risking their lives, I even though you have parents who are agreeing that this is an idea that they should do, I don't know if you can follow through on that.
Yeah, and I look at some of the big coaches like Nick Saban, who said, you know, that he's pushing back against the idea that, oh, it's all about money and that's a motivating factor because these kids aren't getting paid and it's different from the NFL. He's saying it really is about the importance of sport and about the about the kids that are playing, and that it's so important, and that, you know, they want to keep playing because it's the possible benefits of a college football, not only education, but what could happen afterwards. But with, again, we go back to the same thing. Some conferences aren't choosing to play. So why do you put athletes, why do you put kids in that situation? Because we don't know what's going to happen as the season rolls out. And we can't put that sport in a bubble. And I think it's pretty dangerous.
Do you think part of the problem, at least in college football, is the fact that it's, for some people, it's a ticket out of whatever lifestyle they may currently have, and sometimes the only ticket out?
I think for certainly some of the players would feel that way, because they have crazy wild athletic skills, and they know, and they've seen what's happened with other players from disadvantaged areas or beginnings or whatnot, and they want that. They want to be able to jump up and to be able to make the kind of money they could make and have that kind of career. And I think that certainly drives some of them, because you know that what happens if you miss a year, what happens to your standing in what could be a draft position, or do you even make it into the draft? You're one of those sort of bubble players, if you will. And absolutely, I think that plays into the minds of some of those kids and probably their families, whether they want to put that pressure on them or not. And then even the coaches, like what Nick Saban is saying, putting on a college football season, that it's important. It's important to do this. It's school pride. It's competition. It's all of that.
And if you were able to go back a few months and wave a magic wand, what would you change? Assuming, you know, COVID is going to hit, what would you change as far as how all the sports franchises and college sports have handled this? In other words, what did they do well? What have they not done well?
I think what some of them have done well is to actually decide that they were going to postpone in the beginning, because there was so much uncertainty and there was pressure to continue, because that's a lot of money, and also jobs. There are people that are vendors that this is sending their kids to school because they work the hot dog stands, and you know, you've got sports that have lengthy home standings whether it's the NBA or whether it's Major League Baseball. So there was that consideration, and I think it was smart to play the game of, okay, let's see, and if we want to come back, but if we have to postpone for now, we're going to do that. And pretty much all of them did that, even if it was reluctantly, because they saw what was happening. So I think that was a smart thing to do. And then I think the thing that wasn't actually as smart was to release all this optimism, you know, to be tweeting out that we're going to definitely move forward and here's what's happening, and really giving, I think, a lot of people the sense that, the first wave might go away and then the second wave, oh gosh, that could be at the tail end of November, because we're all playing around with what we believe the science is and what we're being told and what we're seeing happening to the people around us, if anyone you know has gotten it and what's happened to them. And I think it's what's in your wheelhouse is what you're watching. And I think there was some information that was put out that should have really been held back. There were a lot of people that are, of course, furious about this because they think that it's a hoax, or it's not true, or we're exaggerating, or we're killing the economy of sports, which it is hurting the economy of sports. It is killing the economy of sports, but it's life versus the economy of sports and the economy in general when we go out beyond the boundaries of sports. So I think that's the issue, and that's the mistake.
I know you expressed a bit of optimism about Major League Baseball finishing their season. I'm not necessarily as optimistic as you are in that regard. But in looking at the four major sports, do you think they will have any problem in getting their season through? I tend to believe that the NBA, NHL, and NFL will have a complete season, or at least a finished season. I'm not so sure about Major League Baseball.
No, I think Major League Baseball is going to push ahead. I think they're going to re-rack schedules if they have to, because they've shortened the season so much. Now it really is a sprint. It's not a marathon anymore. And I think they're going to find a way to do this. Like, you know, you're seeing tests that are constantly being given to the players. For example, you know, take any franchise, the Mets, they tested negative the other day, so they continue to play, and that's what they're looking for. Let's get everyone negative if we have tests that are positive, and let's move forward. And if they can continue to do that, I think they'll actually, I think they'll actually finish the season. I agree with you on the NBA. I think 100% NBA absolutely finishes. There's not even a question mark. Same thing with the NHL. And I'm curious, Peter, about your opinion about the NFL. So you really think the NFL, even traveling from city to city, even with no fans, you think they'll find a way to finish the season?
I think they will, only because they've watched what Major League Baseball has done and are going to try and correct any of the mistakes that Major League Baseball has had. And with no fans, I think they can do well. The only problem being, it's the most contact-filled sport. I mean, so is hockey, but hockey has more naturally protective gear. It's the fullest contact sport without gear, so we'll see how that works out. But I think they can finish the NFL season.
Right. See, I think because of the contact that you just said, and I think because Sunday being worried about what happens on Sunday, what if people, they have the temperatures that go up when they test them and it's on Sunday, and then the NFL just had like 77 false positive tests, and that's worrisome, because then what does that mean? I think it's going to be tough, but I'm a football fan all the way across the board. I'm a rabid sports fan, and as somebody who makes a living in the sports and content business on the air, I mean, of course, I'm rooting for the sports to be there. I think it buoys people's emotions and makes you feel better, and it gets you feeling like there's something that's normal as you watch the game. But I don't know that we're going to have them.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see and keep our fingers crossed. Less than a minute, tell us about your book, Deal Your Own Destiny.
Yeah, Deal Your Own Destiny is about, it's my story and the story of the rock stars I interviewed in sports and business and other walks of life, and how they overcame whatever obstacles were in their way to truly make it. And when they fell down, how they got up and how they went higher when other people went lower, so to speak. And in my case, it took 500 rejections for me to get a job in sports, because there were certainly guys that supported me, but they weren't the gatekeepers. But I just kept on persevering, and I found that with all of the people that I interviewed, from Tom Brady to, you know, Troy Aikman. I flew with the Cowboys, covered them, and all the experiences I put in that book that people can use with exercises on how they can really, really deal their own destiny.
Excellent. Kate, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, anytime. I enjoyed it.
Sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney. Again, her book is Deal Your Own Destiny, and we'll have her back soon to dive a little deeper into her book. In the meantime, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0576, and you'll find links to Kate's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Thank you.
It's time to crack a spine.
The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is, in the form of a question. Who is Stuart Nolman? Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. And the answer is the host of this this Book Banter segment, and who is going to, on this segment, review a book by Alex Trebek.
Now, before we get to Alex Trebek and his book, let's wing our way a little bit through history.
Yeah.
Wasn't a certain host of Book Banter at one time or another on Jeopardy?
Yes, that's right, Peter. You got that one. You got the prize. And yeah, because exactly 30 years ago, I got to live that bookworm's dream, Peter, when I went to L.A. for the first time to participate as a contestant on the on Jeopardy.
And how did you do?
Well, all right. So I, to quote Weird Al Yankovic, I lost on Jeopardy, but I managed to make it to the final round, because if you don't, that's very embarrassing. And won some nice prizes. They at the time, they didn't give cash for second and third place contestants. You know, only the winner of the game got the cash.
And what was your prize?
Well, it was a Nintendo Entertainment System, which is now terribly outdated, which I could probably donate to the Smithsonian. And the one thing that really stood out was the year supply of Hershey's chocolate syrup. Amongst other Hershey products.
You know, that tops some of the big prizes on Canadian game shows. I mean, how much Zebrick can you have?
I know. There's so many floors you could just cover the stuff with.
Exactly. Anyway, congratulations again, belated, although we talked way back then at the time, and it was exciting news, and it's still exciting news. But let's get to the book at hand. Let's talk about Alex Trebek.
Yeah, well, you know what? Speaking of being a contestant on Jeopardy, it was a year-long experience. You know, from the time I did the contestant search in Montreal to the taping of the show in Hollywood to when it finally aired on TV in June of that year, that was unforgettable. But when it was all said and done, I was constantly peppered with three types of questions. First, how did you do in the game? Second, what did you win? And third, what is Alex Trebek really like in person? And he's a good guy, let me tell you. To answer that very quickly, he's a nice guy. But during its 36 years on the air as one of the most popular TV shows in syndication, Jeopardy! Is not only a hit with millions of viewers because of the unique characteristics of the returning champions, not to mention their vast abilities with factual knowledge and winning large sums of cash as a result, but also because of the magnetic personality of its Canadian-born host, Alex Trebek. Now, faithful Jeopardy! Viewers always wanted to know more about Alex. However, he chooses what he wants to divulge with the viewers about himself, the person behind all those daily doubles, clue, crew, clues, and answers phrased in the form of questions. Now, Jeopardy! Fans can find out more about its dynamic host with the recent release of his book, The Answer Is. That's the name of the book. Now, however, this was a book that Trebek was at first reluctant to write, and he constantly turned down any publishers with proposals to write a memoir because he thought he didn't have an interesting life, and he had no interest in writing a book. So after reading this book, I think Trebek has proven himself wrong. He does have an interesting life. He does have an interesting career in broadcasting. And he does have an interesting story to tell about his life.
Well, you know, he's just a modest Canadian like all of us are. So
That's true. I mean, you know, from the wilds of Sudbury, Ontario. And but this book is not your, you know, run-of-the-mill memoir. It's basically a collection of brief autobiographical reflections that focuses on Trebek's life and career, from his upbringing in Sudbury and Toronto, his early days in broadcasting with the CBC, the other game shows he hosted prior to Jeopardy, including the $128,000 question, which I auditioned for back in 1977, his humanitarian work with World Vision, and the beliefs that play a major role in his private and public life. And you know what? Jeopardy! Fans won't be disappointed with the book, as Trebek offers plenty of behind-the-scenes stories of his 36 years hosting the show, from what a typical taping day is like for him, how the answers and questions are prepared, to the monumental moment when he decided to shave off his trademark mustache, to his reflections on some of the of some of Jeopardy's greatest champions, including Ken Jennings and, yes, Jeopardy James Holzhauer. But then there's also the chapters that deal with his ongoing battle with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, which he was diagnosed with last year. And he writes about this very challenging part of his life with a great deal of honesty, humility, and courage. As he expresses how he deals with chemotherapy, the widespread encouragement and support he has been receiving, and even the Jeopardy category that it inspired called, and this is for real, The Medical File of Alex Trebek. Now, finally, the answer is the book gives readers a complete, entertaining portrait of one of the most recognized faces on TV during the past four decades, whose life and career was actually quite interesting to learn about, let alone read about. And when you think about it, it's not so bad for a person who has spent 36 seasons giving out answers to contestants who have to furnish him with the questions.
Mm. Although I still like one of his previous game shows that he had on NBC, High Rollers, which he co-hosted with a Montrealer.
Rudy Lee,
yeah. So yeah. I missed that game show. But I think you just buried the lead a few moments ago. Did you say you auditioned for another game show?
Yes. Yeah. Back in 1977, there was, if you remember, the $64,000 question and its notoriety back in the 50s. They decided to revive it in syndication with the $128,000 question, I guess adjusted for inflation. And if you remember the game show, which was, I think, one of the big nucleus of shows that sparked off the quiz show scandals of the late 50s, you had to be, if you wanted to be a contestant, you had to be an expert on a certain subject. So the invitation went out, and I thought, you know, might as well give it a shot. And I said I'd like to participate as an expert on the Marx Brothers. And I did get an audition. It was over the phone. But somehow I wasn't selected for the show.
How did I miss this little nugget of news after knowing you all these years?
Oh, there's just some things you either you don't divulge or you forgot about. It was just basically a footnote in one's life.
Well, Stuart Nolman, man of mystery. So this week's book again is?
It's called The Answer Is by Alex Trebek. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $32.
And what other books do you recommend in this particular genre, sir?
Well, if you want to read more books about Jeopardy, there are books available, and there's even a couple of new ones coming out in the fall. But one that I thought was pretty interesting was called The Secrets of the Jeopardy Champions. It was written by Chuck Forrest, who is probably one of the first Tournament of Champion winners on the revised Jeopardy of the Alex Trebek era. And he writes all the secrets of how to audition, how to conduct yourself during the game, what it's all about. So you get those secrets from one of its first major champions. And also, speaking of history of game shows, there's one book I enjoyed, which was Chuck Barris's autobiography called The Game Show King. I think it was published around 1991-92. And it's a very straight autobiography and deals with how he put together some of his best-known game shows like the Newlywed Game and the New Treasure Hunt and the Dating Game. And when you read it, it certainly is quite a change of pace from Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Mm.
And again, this week's book is?
It's called The Answer Is by Alex Trebek, and it's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $32.
And we still have to take a moment to give some props to Art Fleming and Don Pardo.
Oh, yes, the originals. You can't forget those two.
Stuart, thank you very much once again for being on the program, you man of mystery. How can one find you, unless, of course, you want to remain hidden?
Well, you could also find out about, I would talk about my Reach for the Top years, but
We know about that. We all know about the Reach for the Top years.
Yeah, you just didn't know about what went on just before Reach for the Top.
Yeah.
Well, if I want to divulge about it, you can read about it in the Montreal Times every week in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Ding! You're welcome.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that's heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. But we have one more item to share with you before we wrap things up, and you know what that is, boys and girls. It's time now for The Idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff file presents the idiot of the day.
A group of men already on pretrial release for previous offenses are behind a string of burglaries. Authorities seized more than $150,000 in cash, an AK-47, a Smith & Wesson handgun, cell phones, iPads, jewelry, designer handbags, ammunition, blank checks, fraudulent debit and credit cards, and a stolen vehicle. 21-year-old Zion O'Dane Denver Hall, 19-year-old Tyreek Devontae Williams, and 18-year-old Tremaine Raquan Hill were arrested. They are accused of being part of a criminal organization committing burglaries, armed burglaries, fraud, gun thefts, and other criminal acts throughout South Florida. Hall, Williams, and Hill each face charges of burglary, grand theft, and racketeering. Hall is facing 35 counts, and Williams and Hill are facing 25 and 19 counts, respectively. Now, right about now, you're probably asking yourself, why do these three guys rise to the lofty perch I'm currently giving them? Well, because I buried the lead. I failed to read a part of the sentence as I originally had written it and the story was originally reported. So, let me repeat it properly. A group of men, already on pretrial release for previous offenses, are behind a string of burglaries carried out while wearing ankle monitors that track their locations. They were taken into custody while under house arrest awaiting trial on unrelated charges. So, the question doesn't really need to be asked, but tradition dictates that I do. Why? Oh, why? Would the three of you carry out a string of burglaries while you're all wearing ankle monitors and the authorities are following your movements on a screen like a giant Pac-Man game? One reason, and one reason only, you're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0576. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0576. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSDJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mama jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.